chipmunk. But as this one flew over the group, it uttered one long, guttural scream that caused three of the thieves to drop their knives. Nothing with feathers ought to have been able to make a noise like that. It had claws in it. The bird wheeled in a tight circle and fluttered to a perch on a convenient wooden hippo, where it glared at the group with mad red eyes. The leading thief tore his fascinated gaze away from it, just as he heard Arthur say, quite pleasantly,
"This is a number two throwing knife. I got 96% for throwing knives. Which eyeball don't you need?"
The leader stared at him. As far as the other young assassins were concerned, he noticed, one was still staring fixedly at the seagull, while the other was busy being noisily sick over the parapet.
"There's only one of you," he said. "There's five of us."
"But soon there'll be only four of you," said Arthur.
Moving slowly, like someone in a daze, Tepic reached out his hand to the seagull. With any normal seagull, this would have resulted in the loss of a thumb, but the creature hopped onto it with the smug air of the master returning to the old plantation. It seemed to make the thieves increasingly uneasy. Arthur's smile wasn't helping either.
"That's a nice bird," said the leader, in the inanely cheerful tones of the extremely worried.
Tepic was dreamily stroking its bullet head.
"I think it would be a good idea if you went away," said Arthur, as the bird shuffled sideways onto Tepic's wrist.
Gripping with webbed feet, thrusting out its wings to maintain its balance, it should have looked clownish, but instead looked full of hidden power, as though it was an eagle's secret identity. When it opened its mouth, revealing a ridiculous purple bird tongue, there was a suggestion that this seagull could do a lot more than menace a seaside tomato sandwich.
"Is it magic?" said one of the thieves, and was quickly hushed. "We'll be going then," said the leader. "Sorry about the misunderstanding."
Tepic gave him a warm, unseeing smile. Then they all heard the insistent little noise. Six pairs of eyes swiveled around and down. Chidders were already in position. Below them, pouring darkly across the dehydrated mud, the Ankh was rising. Dios, First Minister and High Priest among High Priests, wasn't a naturally religious man. It wasn't a desirable quality in a High Priest. It affected your judgment, made you unsound. Start believing in things and the whole business became a farce. Not that he had anything against belief. People needed to believe in gods, if only because it was hard to believe in people. The gods were necessary. He just required that they stayed out of the way and let him get on with things. Mind you, it was a blessing that he had the looks for it. If your genes saw fit to give you a tall frame, a bald head, and a nose you could plough rocks with, they probably had a definite aim in mind. He instinctively distrusted people to whom religion came easily. The naturally religious, he felt, were unstable and given to wandering in the desert and having revelations, as if the gods would lower themselves to that sort of thing. And they never got anything done. They started thinking that rituals weren't important. They started thinking that you could talk to the gods direct. Dios knew, with the kind of rigid and unbending certainty you could pivot the world on, that the gods of Djeli Baby liked rituals as much as anyone else. After all, a god who was against ritual would be like a fish who was against water. He sat on the steps of the throne with his staff across his knees and passed on the king's orders. The fact that they were not currently being issued by any king was not a problem. Dios had been high priest now for, well, more years than he cared to remember. He knew quite clearly what orders a sensible king would be giving, and he gave them. Anyway, the face of the sun was on the throne, and that was what mattered. It was a solid, gold, head-enveloping mask to be worn by the current ruler on all public occasions. Its expression, to the sacrilegious, was one of good-natured constipation. For thousands of years, it had symbolized kingship in Djeli Baby. It had also made it very difficult to tell kings apart. This was extremely symbolic as well, although no one could remember what of. There was a lot of that sort of thing in the Old Kingdom. The staff across his knees, for example, with its very symbolic snakes entwined symbolically around an allegorical camel prod. The people believed this gave the high priest power over the gods and the dead. But this was probably a metaphor, i.e. a lie. Dios shifted position.
"Has the king been ushered to the room of going forth?" he said.
The circle of lesser high priests nodded.
"Dil the embalmer is attending upon him at this instant, O Dios."
"Very well. And the builder of pyramids has been instructed?"
Hoot Kumi, the High Priest of Kefin, the two-faced god of gateways, stepped